Okay. Good morning, everyone. I think we'll make a start. Today is week six, which is actually the final week of the series. We are going to have one more session next Thursday morning where we're just going to do also a personal growth topic, but connected with Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. But in terms of the Relate series, this is the last one of the series, and the next week is the last one of the term. I want to just begin today with a few announcements. If you have housekeeping announcements, you have it there on your handout, just to go through them quickly. Next week, we've got a number of different preparation classes for Rosh Hashanah. So next Thursday morning, next Wednesday morning at 10, at the home of Ariella Spiridis, we'll be having a shiur on the holy days, origins, customs, and insights. Just to give the Yontif a bit more meaning, go through some of the explanations and some of the insights onto the upcoming festivals. And as I said, next Thursday will also be the last session we'll do here, a personal growth message coming from Rosh Hashanah. Also, Wednesday night, we have something which we call Mind Spinners. We did this before Pesach, it was really lots of fun. And we're going to do it again before Rosh Hashanah. It's going to be held at 8 o'clock down at Nefesh, 54 Ruska Street, where there's going to be 5 10-minute power lectures on a diverse range of topics, but all to do with Rosh Hashanah. So come along, it should be lots of fun. The details are on the wall over there. So come along. While we're on announcements, just to announce that after next Thursday, we're going to take a break for Yom Tov, of course. And the next series will begin next term, which will be on the 14th of October. Okay? That's when school goes back, the 14th of October. And the topic... The topic is going to be 7 pillars of self-creation. It's about identifying and creating and growing ourselves, taking lessons from the days of creation of the world, because we have a principle that the person is a mini world, so to speak. So therefore, the creation of the world forms also a platform to understand 7 pillars of self-creation, which we're going to do next term. Okay. Today we're going to complete the Relate series. We're going to talk about the last two letters, which is talk and enjoy. Talk is the second part of communication, which we began last week. And enjoy is putting it all together and show with you an important insight to do with relationships. So let's just a little bit of review first. We talked last week about communication being broken up into two parts, which are called ask and talk, which ask is the concept of listening, inquiring about the other person's world, seeking to understand the other person before we can talk, before we can communicate, because we explained that the difference between human being communication and animal communication is that animals send signals, they share information, they give status reports, but they don't talk to the other person. Whereas human beings hopefully talk to another human being. It's interesting that I didn't mention this last week, but I think it's a valid concept, and someone brought it up with me afterwards. Today, in today's world, with the progress of technology, it's just an interesting observation that on the one hand, we have tremendous development on the ability to communicate. The speed, the distance, right? So emails, Skype, SMS, Twitter, Facebook, whatever, right? They increase, on one level, they increase the level of communication to an incredible, unprecedented level, right? The problem is that when we analyze and observe it, there's actually much less real communication going on today. Right. And this actually was brought home to me. I was once in Canada gave a talk on this topic of communication, and someone came over to me who worked for a big company who had companies all over the world, and his job, his role was communications. And he was fascinated. He said he came to lecture because obviously he knows everything about communication, and he wanted to know what a rabbi could teach him about communication. So it was more of a curiosity that he came along. But afterwards he came to me and he said that it hit home to him that he's in charge of this massive communication network, and he now realizes that actually no one's really communicating with each other. Right? They're sending messages to each other. As someone said to me last week after the shiur, that the greatest example, or one of the greatest examples of signal sending, is Facebook. Right? Or Twitter, for example. Right? You send a message for doesn't matter how many people are out there, doesn't matter, you don't even know how many people are out there listening or picking up the message, but you're not communicating, you're sending a signal. Now, although these things have tremendous benefits and it's wonderful and it makes life a lot easier, etc., but it's important to absorb that concept that it doesn't replace communication. In fact, it minimizes communication. It takes away from the communication. Because at the end of the day, to really communicate, you have to, first of all, communication can really only take place the old-fashioned way, when you're talking to someone face-to-face. I don't even know if Skype does it, but you need to be able to sit with the person, you need to be able to pick up facial expressions, you need to be able to understand the nuances that are behind the communication, and most importantly, there needs to be dialogue, right? Not monologue, there needs to be dialogue where people are actually talking to each other, listening to each other and talking to each other, because as we explained last week, the foundation of real communication is step one is to listen. And when you're communicating via technology, there's not a lot of listening going on. There's a lot of signal sending, but not a lot of listening. So that's what we established last week. We talked about the stages of listening, making eye contact, not interrupting, not formulating a response, essentially shutting yourself out for a moment before you to understand the other perspective properly, and only then reintroducing yourself, so to speak, to communicate back. One of the things that came up last week, and I was talking to a few people about it afterwards, and I just want to mention it again just to elaborate a little bit about it as much as I can, and that's the question that always comes up in these relationship discussions, is about the concept of it being two ways, right? And what do you do if one person is investing the techniques into the relationship but doesn't seem to be coming back? So I was thinking about it, and I think there are two concepts. One is, as I mentioned last week, that sometimes, not always, but sometimes when we invest a technique into a relationship, it makes it easier to get it back. It creates a culture. So if you listen to someone, you're creating a culture of listening. And hopefully they'll respond. Doesn't always happen, but hopefully they'll also listen. But I think the most important thing is to do with what we're going to talk about today, and that is a relationship must be two-way. Okay. So here we're talking about the techniques that we need to apply to the relationship. But a relationship must be two-way, because a relationship must be two people, two identities that are not disintegrated by the relationship, right? And therefore, part of sharing is sharing yourself as well. The other person you need to communicate to the other person who you are and what you are feeling. So that's this part two. It's not enough just to listen to them. They also need to know, they need to listen to you. And therefore, when we listen to other people, but we feel after a while that we really are truly listening, but we're not getting it back, we have to learn the art of having a difficult conversation, which we're going to talk about in a few moments. And that is, we need to be able to communicate clearly to them that, hey, this is not coming back. We almost need to insist, in a respectful but an assertive way, that it does come back. Because for a relationship to be really successful, it does have to be two ways. And that's difficult, because we don't always want to do that, and it's difficult to do, and it creates tension. But it kind of has to happen for the relationship to progress. And hopefully some of the things we're going to talk about today will help that along, because we learn the art of communicating back as well. Okay. So once we learn the art of listening, as we did last week, we can then be talking, right? Because as I said last week, communication is not about just understanding the world of the other. Communication is about connection of two different worlds. And therefore, if I communicate to someone, the purpose of that communication is sharing my world, right? It's sharing my opinion, my perspective, but it's doing it in a way where it's absorbed and respected and valued by the one that's listening to me. That's why listening, silence, as we described it, is just step one, because silence gives you the ability to completely shut down and focus on understanding the perspective of the other. But once you've done that, you then need to revisit your perspective, which might change through listening, and might not, it might change, it might not change, but then you need to communicate back your world, your perspective, your feelings, your ideas, your opinions. But then to do it in a way where there's an amazing ability to communicate yourself, but to the other person, to into the world, into the reality of the other person.
Okay. Yeah. On that one, is it not the reality when some people just want to offload onto you what they feel in time of emotion, in time of depression, they don't expect a response, basically just use you as a sounding board, right, to relieve themselves.
Good point. But the truth is, that's part of listening. Part of listening is that when you listen, when you really listen to someone, you kind of know why they're talking. You're right. And therefore, sometimes your response is no response. No response is also a response. Right? And that's true. That's certainly a part of communication. But I suppose what I'm talking about is normally when there's a discussion, when there's dialogue, right? And you're sharing ideas, that's when it's even harder to listen because you want to give back your idea before you've heard the other person's perspective, right? But you're absolutely correct. So what I want to do is examine some of the principles of good communication, of talking back, of being able to talk so that the other person understands, that the other person is respected, but also is able to absorb what you're sharing with them. Now, what we've said is that communication is very powerful. Words are very powerful. So words will always fuel, will always upgrade, will always strengthen the content that you're going to put into the words. Okay? And that's why communication is so critical and so dangerous, but yet so powerful. Because if it's bad communication, it fuels negativity. If it's good communication, then it's positive and effective, right? So in order to respond to someone, in order to talk to someone, in order to engage in what we call effective communication, what's important is that after listening, you're able to communicate to someone with the following formula. And that formula is a formula of a combination of what we call seichel and midot, intellect and emotion. And you'll see why I'm sharing with this to you, because you'll see why sometimes communication breaks down. Every experience in life needs a combination of intellect and emotion. That's why God created us, as we've mentioned so many times, with the 10 powers of the soul, 3 of which are intellectual, 7 of which are emotional. Why? Because intellect and emotion are completely opposite. When we think about something intellectually, it allows us to think about something objectively, with a certain level of maturity, to analyze it from the outside, not to get emotionally involved so we can see it clearly. Intellect brings us a certain level of clarity, doesn't confuse issues, doesn't blur issues, which is amazingly powerful, but it's also its downside. Because intellect, because it's objective, and because it's more mature and it's more from the outside in, it's also very cold and detached. Okay? Which is why whenever we engage in any experience of life, we also need feeling, we need emotion, we need passion. We need excitement. We need to instill a level of emotion into the process so that we're excited. So that we're happy about what we're doing, or we're strong about what we're doing. We have a level of conviction, we have a level of feeling, right? That is true with everything that we do in life. It's the combination of the problem, of course, is if you only have emotion without intellect, you're in deep trouble. Because emotion is so fiery, because it's so excitable, because it's so passionate, it's also very instinctive, and it's very subjective, because that's what emotion is. Emotion is when you get involved, when you're engaged. That's what emotion is. And therefore it's subjective, and very sometimes very instinctive, which very quickly derails into being very aggressive, very impulsive, and doesn't normally bring good results. Right? That's why every experience of life needs a combination of the maturity and the analysis and the objectivity of intellect, but yet the conviction, the feeling, the passion of emotion. One without the other normally breaks down. In relationships, it's the same thing. Yeah?
Following your guts, following your gut feeling, is that emotion or is that...
your rational mind.
That's a very good point. Following your gut feeling is a very used concept today. I have to be completely blunt and honest with you that it's a very non-Jewish concept. and in my, from where I'm standing, I can only give you the Jewish view. And I'll explain to you what I mean. Most times we are told, look, that's not completely true. In other words, there are times where, like, parents have intuition that you, like, there's a very gray area, you just kind of know what the right answer is. But very, very often, most times, in fact, I'd submit to you that following your gut feeling is not a good thing, because at the end of the day, following one's gut feeling means that we're subjective. And most people who haven't yet developed themselves to be perfect human beings, which normally only happens at the end of one's life, hopefully, right, have a certain level of ego, which gets in the way. We all have a certain level of ego, some less, some more, but we all have all of our egos. And following one's gut feeling often means that we're following really what we want to do. Sometimes that can be very good. It might be a good result. Sometimes not. Very often what happens is when people follow their gut feeling, they perceive that it's an incredibly good thing to do, but nevertheless are completely blurred and not able to be completely objective, and therefore are not really able to analyze if it's a good thing or not. So, but however, I think the substitute for that is, and I think what people say following your gut, I'm not suggesting one follow, what we follow our gut at all. What I am saying is that we put in a lot of emotion, and that's different. Because when you have the combination, see, following one's own instinct has an advantage because it's you, it's like real, it's like really what you are. That can be achieved by the combination of emotion and intellect, right? And when we have a combination of intellect and emotion, we're properly guided, we have that objectivity, we're able to make mature decisions, but yet still be able to put ourselves into it completely, because emotion goes to the very core, the essence of the person. But it has to come with the direction of intellect, right? And that's true in relationships. I mean, relationships that are only intellectual are terrible relationships, right? They're just very, very cold and very detached type of relationships. Yet relationships that are only emotional, as great as emotion is, they often go off the track. And if this is true with every experience in life, it is certainly true with communication, right? To communicate from a position of strength, meaning to communicate effectively, to communicate like a human being, which means to be able to communicate in a way where it's absorbed and received and listened to by another perspective, by another reality, communication has to always come, using the very, very simple phrase that our parents always told us when we were little kids, think before you talk. In other words, there's got to be some level of intellect and emotion when we talk, right? That's only possible after you've listened. Because after you've listened to someone, then you're in a position to make a decision of how to respond. I'm not talking about sitting down to contemplate for 3 days before you send someone back an email. What I'm saying is it's sort of a habitual type thing where we build up a consciousness of talking to people in a way that there's a certain amount of direction in that communication. There's a decision-making process in that communication, that we're talking to them in a way that's respectful to them, that might not be what we wanted to say, but it's important for them to hear. It's the way they will receive it better. It's the way my child will listen better. It's the way my spouse will feel more valued, right? But at the same time, we don't want communication to be only intellectual. You want it to be full of emotion. You want to be able to connect to someone through communication. You want communication to be a bonding agent. And therefore, communication must be with excitement, it must be with passion to be really strong and effective, but it's always got to be with that combination of intellect and emotion. And that achieves what I'm going to share with you, the concept which I refer to as communication of strength. Right? When we communicate in a very detached, only intellectual way, or we communicate instinctively, impulsively, that's communication coming from weakness. Right? It's a tremendous strength to bring together emotion and intellect. That's the power of the human being. It's a tremendous strength to balance those two things and then to formulate a proper and effective communication. You'll see what I mean as we go along. Okay. So in this context, let's explore a few different principles of communication, or a few different categories of communication, which are critical in all sorts of relationships. first one is communication of clarity. Right? One level of communication is that communication has to be clear, because it has to be understood by someone else. Okay. Therefore, often, you know, we discussed in the very beginning the concept of respect and respecting other people's needs. The problem often is that needs are not always clear. And when we respect other people's needs, even if we want to respect other people's needs, we often don't know what they are. Now, of course, we need to be sensitive people, and real respectful people try and sort of figure out what other people's needs are. But it's not always clear. It's not always clear because people come from different directions. People come from different realities, right? And therefore, it's important in a relationship not to expect other people to know what our needs are. It doesn't matter how long the relationship's been going for. It's important to be respectful and clear about your needs. It's important to communicate one's needs, not just to communicate one's needs, but to communicate one's needs with specifics, right? I once saw this in a book on marriage, a very clever thing, where the author of the book writes that sometimes people make general statements. They're upset about something, so they'll say, you know, I need you to be more thoughtful. You have to understand, particularly talking about men and women, thoughtful has many translations. What one person thinks thoughtful is, someone else doesn't think it means. It means something totally different. If you want someone to be more thoughtful, you need to translate that. Right? Something like, I need you, that when you're going to be late from the office and you're going to come an hour and a half late, I need you just to give me a quick call to tell me that you're running late. And that's very different to say, I need you to be more thoughtful. Right? I need you more thoughtful is a general statement. But how's a person supposed to figure out? Now, sometimes we expect people to know what we mean. But when we communicate needs, we have to communicate them specifically, because if we do, they're much clearer and they're much easier to understand. I need space. I need space can mean 1,000 things, but someone needs to be specific. I need space might mean when I come home, before everyone jumps on me, I just need 10 minutes to unwind. That's different. That's more specific, right? I need more attention. It's good to translate that. I need one night a week where the TV is off so we can actually talk. Right? That kind of thing. So communication has to be specific. That's one area of communication of clarity. Well, this becomes, by the way, incredibly important. It's important in all relationships, but where it becomes incredibly important is with parents. Children don't always understand the most basic and simple instructions that we give them, even though to us it's completely simple and obvious. Right? Do you know what tidy up your room means? You might, right? You might know what it means. I guarantee you that your 14-year-old does not know what it means. And I've experimented with this. Because I've tried giving instruction, tidy up your room. Half an hour later, did you tidy up your room? Yes. And the yes wasn't a lie. It was a complete, sincere yes. Now you go to the room, it looks like World War III, right? Because it was a yes. Some of them threw a few dirty tissues on the floor. They threw it out in the garbage. So they tidied up their room. Now, I don't know if it's that important to get a teenager tidy up their room, but if it is important to you, then you need to be specific. Some kids might, and with little children particularly, right? Sometimes little children, some kids need to be given instructions one at a time. You know, sometimes parents are busy cooking dinner and they scream out an instruction to the other side of the house, about 7 instructions, one after another, and expect it all to sort of fall in place? It doesn't. First of all, if they're the other side of the house, they don't hear you. Right. Second of all, by the time you get to the third instruction, they've way forgotten the first one. Right. So little children, you need to get down, you need to make eye contact, you need to say, okay, I want you to do this. By the way, some children have, it's a processing problem. Not all children process information at the same rate. Sometimes it needs to be one instruction or two instructions at a time, if you want to get results, that is. Yeah, that's me. Yeah, I was waiting for someone to say that. Okay. So it's communication of clarity, right? There's different forms of communication. But again, communication always has to be based on the understanding of the other person's world, on understanding what they need, not just what you are feeling at the time. Right? So therefore, if you have a frustration about, I need you to be more thoughtful, that's not talking to the world of the other, that's sending a signal. Specific communication is talking to the world of the other person. Clarity is talking to the child's world, to the child's reality. The most difficult... Yeah.
When you give advice to
Okay, so that's a great comment. No, so again, communication is the merging of two worlds, right? When I said listening to other people, I don't mean agreeing with them, and I don't mean talking to them from their perspective. And when someone asks a person for advice, someone asks me for advice, I'm not asking for their feeling, I'm asking for what I think, right? However, there's two ways that I can share what I think. I can share what I think totally detached from their reality, or I can share what I think fits into their reality. It's still my world. And communication is that. You shouldn't make the mistake that communication means dissolving your identity. Right? We go back to this principle. Relationships is about retaining the individuality of each person. And therefore, connection and bonding relationships must be two ways. Relationships must involve sustaining and nurturing and developing the ongoing individuality of each person. Right? And that's why communication is a tricky thing. Because when you communicate, communication is not about projecting the other person's world through your world, through your words. That's not what it is. Right? Communication is about sharing your world. But it's sharing your world with the understanding of who you're talking to. An understanding of how it's going to be absorbed. And doing it in the most effective way that it's listened to by another perspective, right? So, if I want my teenager to tidy up the room, it's not their world at all. It's my opinion that the room needs to be tidied up. Right? But, if I want it, I can do it in two ways. Either I can do it by sending a signal, in which way I'm guaranteed that it won't get done. Or I can do it in a way where I actually understand who I'm talking to. And I respect who I'm talking to. And I might even put into the conversation that I understand that to you it's not important, but until you pay rent, it's my house. And therefore you have to tidy up your room, right? I mean, whatever it is. In a respectful way, okay? The same thing is when you share a need or you share a frustration, right? You're sharing something that you're feeling, but you're doing it with the respect for the other person. You're doing it with the understanding that there's another world, another perspective out there. And those two things have to come together. Yeah. Where it comes together most strongly and most in the greatest, sort of in the most emphasized way, is the next part of communication, which is we have to touch on because it's such an important part of communication and relationships. It's the communication which we call difficult conversations. Right. A difficult conversation is basically sharing with someone else that you're upset or you're angry, but doing it in an effective way that it'll be listened to. Right? It could be between spouses, it could be between parents and children, it could be an employer to an employee. And most people don't like having difficult conversations. Most people put off difficult conversations. Why? Because we're afraid of failure. We don't know how it's going to work. We don't know how it's going to pan out. We don't know what kind of response we're going to get. We might get an angry response that we might feel rejected, and that no one wants to feel rejected. No one wants to feel let down. Right? So if someone's done something to me, I kind of swallow it, or I walk around and I put it off because I don't communicate it to them because I'm just worried what they're going to say. I'm worried what's going to do to the relationship. I'm worried about rocking the boat. Right? The problem with that, of course, is that it's completely damaging and ineffective to walk around with it in your heart. I've mentioned to you in the past that the Torah says you shall not hate your brother in your heart. Which obviously is a problematic phrase. What do you mean you can't hate your brother in your heart? And if it's not in your heart, you could hate your brother? Right? But the Talmud says exactly this idea. That the worst thing is to walk around with a resentment for someone in your heart. Because what will happen is one of two things. Either the resentment will just grow, because resentment, hate festers in one's heart. That's how it works. And what will happen eventually is the second thing, that you'll explode. And when you explode, if you don't explode, you'll just feel worse and worse about yourself. It'll just eat at you, and it'll damage the relationship in one way or another. What will probably happen is eventually you'll explode. And when you do explode, explosion, anger, is communication through emotion only. And it's normally very, very damaging and very, very ineffective. It doesn't achieve the goal, and it damages the relationship. And it's full of venom, and it's full of hate. Okay. So therefore, if someone is upset with someone else, if you really are bothered by something that someone does or has done or continues to do, You've only got two choices. One choice is to let it go completely. In other words, you come to a point where it doesn't bother you to such an extent that you've forgotten about it. That's fine. Not everything has to be communicated, right? Sometimes we over-communicate. Not everything has to be said. But it only doesn't have to be said if it's out of your heart as well as your mouth. Right? But if it's not, if it's something that you're having difficulty getting out of your heart, so to speak, you cannot stop thinking about it, and you've tried to let it go and just doesn't because it's really bothersome, it's really bothering you, then no matter what the relationship is, you actually have to have that difficult conversation. And here is where the combination of intellect and emotion is so important. Because you feel upset about something, that's a feeling. You want that upsetness to be communicated. You want the other person to know that you feel hurt by what they have said or done. But you don't want to do it in an impulsive, instinctive way because you want to talk to them. You don't want to just let off steam. You want to be talking to them so that they listen and respect you. And for them to listen and respect you, you've got to listen and respect them. And therefore, a difficult conversation is a conversation you need to have with tremendous respect, tremendous guidance, tremendous decision-making. You need to rehearse, almost, a difficult conversation. Because difficult conversations have to be where you communicate that you do value the other person, you respect the other person, you judge them favorably, maybe they didn't mean to do this. But nevertheless, you're also a person, and you want them to understand what it's doing to you. Right? These are the most difficult things to have, and it's the most the conversations that people have least.
It's not what you say, but it's the way that you say it.
Well, it's the way you say it, and also what you say. Because what you say has to include words that it's not only what you say. I mean, what you say is incredibly important, but also it's what you say in terms of the words that you communicate that demonstrate that you value the other person. You're not putting the other person down. You're not attacking the personality of the person. You're isolating an incident, or you're isolating a phrase that they've said, or you're isolating something that they've done that is really upsetting to you, right? Because no one will listen to you if they're not respected. That's clear, right? So they need to feel valued in the process. Here you are, you knock them over the head, you're criticizing them, but at the same time, they need to feel respected, right? So part of communication of clarity is finding the strength to have what we call assertive communication. In other words, to share with someone a difficult conversation where on the one hand you're not wishy-washy. You're absolutely clear. The worst thing, by the way, is to tell someone you're upset and then like not to be able to get it out. And the person doesn't know what you want. Right? You know, the other day, I don't want to say, but maybe, you know, hello, get it out already. You know, say it. Right? So you've got to have the strength to be able to say it clearly. Just spell it out, exactly what it is that bothers you. But at the same time, to have enough guidance and enough objectivity and detachment, together with the conviction and assertiveness and communicating you're upset, to put that together and say it in a very firm but very respectful way. Very difficult thing to do, but a critical skill to learn in every type of relationship. We didn't get the CDs yet. We actually dealt with this exact question.
I did,
so
obviously forgotten your answer.
I'm only mentioning it because I mean, I'll give you a quick answer, but it's important to listen to the whole thing. It's a very big thing. But essentially, that's a big problem, right? When you lost the respect for someone, you have to regain it somehow. Otherwise, the relationship cannot continue, right? And that's the quick answer, because we have to find ways to regain that respect. But listen to the big answer, because it's a big answer. I mean, it's obviously tied into the thing I want to share with you, which I'll just share with you briefly again for those who might not have been here, about how to give criticism, right? Because communication of criticism is another form of communication that we all need somewhere along the line in a relationship, particularly if it's a hierarchical relationship, right? We all need to give criticism, but again, criticism is a communication which is important. It's important also to learn how to take criticism, which is another story, but it's also important to learn how to give criticism in a way where it's going to be listened to. So I think I've shared this with you, the famous analogy, the famous story from the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, where he shared the following idea, that in the old Shtetlach, there was a public bathhouses, right? And the way it used to work is there was a sauna. So the way they would put up a lot of steam, and heat rises, of course, the people would go upstairs. One step, they get used to the heat, and they go up another step, and they get to the top where it was, you were really schwitzing. And I don't know what this is, but apparently it's some sort of massage thing where there would be someone on top. In Yiddish, it was called a beder, I think, and he had some sort of broom with bristles or something. And then he would whack the guy in the back, and apparently it was like unbelievable. It was like one of the pleasures of, I don't know what it was, right? And you get this good like zets on the back when you're schwitzing over their way. And the normal response apparently was that you say, ah, it's geschmack, it's good, you know what I'm saying? Give me another one, right? So the previous Rebbe asked the following question. He says, what would happen, do you think, if you're walking in the street and the same guy came over with a broom and whacked you on the back? Right? So you probably whack him back, right? So he said, what's the difference? He said, the difference is two things. It's such a powerful concept, this. Difference is two things, he says. In the top of the schwitzbad over there, he says, on top of the sauna, when he gave you a whack on the back, he did two things first. He warmed you up and he elevated you. He lifted you up. He says, when you warm someone up and you lift them up and then you give them a whack on the back, then they ask for more. Right? But if you don't do that, you just give the whack on the back without it, they give you one back. Right? Again, it's planned communication. It's communication where you need to do difficult things sometimes with communication. But it's got to be not signal sending. It's got to be to the world of the other person. It's okay to criticize someone. Sometimes even this formula doesn't work because a person also has to learn how to take criticism. And that's a self-esteem issue. But nevertheless, if we're going to give criticism, which we have to do sometimes, it's got to be if the person feels really valued, if the person feels lifted by you, if the person feels respected by you, you've lifted them up, you've warmed them up, then you can give the whack on the back and it's okay. Okay, so that's all communication of clarity, right? These communications are communication where you've got to say something clearly, but it's got to be done in a way where it's absorbed by the other person. Then there's a second area of communication. That's the communication of connection. Words that connect. And here I want to share with you a very important idea that actually comes from this week's weekly parsha. In this week's weekly parsha, there's a mitzvah called Bikurim. Bikurim was a mitzvah that took place in the time of the temple times when all Jews lived in Israel and the vast majority of the Jewish nation were farmers. So the Torah says that your first fruit, when a farmer goes out to the field and he sees the fruit beginning to grow, as a sign of gratitude to God and for the blessings which we have received, you've got to take the Bikurim, you've got to take the first fruits to the temple and give it to the Kohen, to the priest, which was symbolic of giving it to God, right? In other words, it's your fruit of your labor, you've worked hard for it, but nevertheless, you take the first fruit and you give it away because it's a sign of gratitude. Gratitude is an important thing, appreciation is incredibly important. It's always, again, it's part of respect for other people that you appreciate what they've done to you. We have the same concept with God, we need to respect and appreciate what the blessings that God gives us, etc. Here comes an amazing thing. The mitzvah of Bikurim, when you would take the fruit to the temple, the action of giving the fruit to the Kohen was symbolic. It's an action which demonstrates and represents appreciation. But nevertheless, the Torah tells us that that was only part of the mitzvah. There was a second part of the mitzvah. And the second part of the mitzvah was that when you give the fruit, there was a somewhat of a lengthy declaration that you have to verbalize, you have to say in front of the Kohen. You have to say to the Kohen, listen, I want to say something to you. I want to declare something. And in that declaration, you go through the history, the summary of a history of our forefathers. They went down to Egypt. They were suffered. They were under persecution from Pharaoh. God brought the miracles, the plagues, and he took them out of Egypt. He gave them Torah, and he brought our forefathers to the land of Israel, the promised land. And then when he did that, he gave us the land, and he gave us the opportunity to grow fruit. I've grown my fruit successfully. I'm full of gratitude to God, and I brought my Bikurim today to show the gratitude. Now, it's an interesting idea because we have the famous English saying, actions speak louder than words, which is true. And yet here I do an action of gratitude. I give away my first fruit, the fruit of my labor, but that's not enough. I've got to say it. There is something about words that isn't achieved even through actions. Because it's only words that can fuel an emotion, and only words that can connect a connection, that can create a connection that doesn't even happen with action. And let me tell you why. There are three ways a human being expresses themselves: thought, speech, and action. Right? It's called the three garments of the soul. Thought is something, when I think something, I'm totally detached from other people. Thought is for me. Thought is an inward expression. Action is where I completely go out of myself and I create something, I do something. The problem with action is that once I've done the action, once I've built the table, once I've written the essay, or once I've done whatever I want to do, I can now go away. You can look at a table, for example, and you won't know who made it. Because the person who created it is now completely detached from the thing that he did, but completely detached. It's completely the opposite to thought, right? Thought is, I can never be detached from my thought. Because thought is a garment, but it's, in mysticism, the analogy is given for thought, it's like the turtle's shell. It's a garment, but it's completely attached to the person, right? You cannot even take it off. The person thinks all the time, but you cannot detach yourself from your thought. Action is the other extreme. I can do something and then walk away, and you won't even know who did it. Speech is that marriage between the two. Speech is when you hear someone talk, even if you recorded speech, there's a person speaking there. There's a person behind that speech. If you know the person, you will know who's speaking. You might know the person who made the table, but you have no idea that he made the table because you don't see him in the table. But if you know the person that's speaking, you hear the voice, you hear the person. In other words, where speech is different to thought, speech leaves me and gets to you. But it doesn't leave me completely. It leaves me and gets to you, but I'm still there. And that's why words is the tool of connection, even bigger than action. And that's why sometimes, of course, speech alone is nothing. Words alone is meaningless. I can say I appreciate from today till tomorrow, but if I don't bring the first fruits, obviously my appreciation is limited. But nevertheless, the opposite is also true. The Torah says if you are going to bring the first fruits, you have to say that thank you. You have to verbalize the thank you. Because the words will fuel that emotion. It will create the connection between you and God. It will create that connection that comes through, that is expressed through the appreciation. And that model is a model for every emotion that exists in a relationship. We have words of connection. And words of connection are very, very important. It's not enough. Actions that express affection are not enough. It has to be expressed in words. Compliments and praise, obviously, every situation, appropriate that situation, and age appropriate, and situation appropriate. But we need to verbalize that we appreciate what someone else has done for us. We need to compliment people when we think, that obviously it has to be in a genuine and proper way, but a compliment is a good thing. Because it shows you appreciate what they've done to you. It shows you value what they've done. But it needs to be verbalized. There's nothing like words. And so often in relationships, people are very quick to express words of negativity, but not so quick to express words of connection. In all relationships. Not so, we're very quick to say when things have gone wrong, but we're not so quick to say when things look right, or when we think someone has done right, or when someone did something that they took you into account and they cared for you. Just to acknowledge, it doesn't have to be lavish, doesn't have to be elaborate, but just to, I appreciated that. Why? As soon as you say it in words, words have an amazing ability to connect. And again, that's the words that are said in a way that they, not only words, they're not only meaningless, but they said in a way that it means something to the other person. You're always conscious of who you're talking to. The hardest words, of course, of connection that are the most difficult to say are words of apology. Right? And sometimes it's an amazing thing. Sometimes you might have made a mistake in a relationship. And you can fix that mistake and your actions can be very clear that you are no longer repeating the same mistake and it's not good enough. All the person wants to hear is, I'm sorry. It's an acknowledgement. It's in words. They want to hear it connected to them. They want to hear just you. It's a simple thing. Some people find it difficult to apologize because they think it's a weakness. Where, of course, the opposite is true. Apology is the greatest strength possible. We acknowledge that you can make a mistake, you're a human being, that's fine, you can fix it. Now, of course, apologies cannot be meaningless. It's got to be translated into some sort of action. But the action alone is also not enough. Because words of connection are really important. Words of greeting. I think I've shared this to you before. The Talmud says that it's such an important thing to be the first person to greet someone. And the way we greet someone, once again, it's not just a signal sending thing, not just a formality. Greeting someone creates the initial connection between two people, and it's got to be a smiling greeting, it's got to be an enthusiastic greeting. Greetings are very, very powerful things. Right? So therefore, that's the second area of communication, the communication of connection, the communication that connects people together. Words of affection, words of appreciation, words of praise, words of gratitude, and even words of apology. And then there's a third area of communication, which then connects to the final thing that I want to talk about, and that's the concept of enjoy. And it's the it's the words that just bond people together. I've not done this in the distant past, but it's such an important thing to repeat when we're talking about words. And this concept comes from one of the great rabbis of the Hasidic dynasty of Ger, called the Sfat Emet. And he says the following. He says that in the Torah, there are three words for communication. There's Dibur, Amira, and Sicha. Okay, you'll see that if you look in the Chumash, you'll see these communications often expressed in one of these three words. The word Sicha is more in Tanakh, in Tehillim, but it's all in Tehillim. And he says, what is the meaning of these three words? I mean, they loosely translate as speaking, saying, and telling, but that doesn't mean much, right? So he says the following. He says that these three words of communication express three different forms of communication. Okay. Dibur, the word dibur, represents clear, structured communication. It's like the communication of clarity we were talking about before. Instructions are dibur. Organizing things, organizing a holiday together, organizing bills, finance together, right? People need to communicate. Giving instructions, communicating what needs to be done. That needs to be done in a way of dibur. Dibur means it's clear, it's structured, it's given one at a time, it's given with some sort of organization. It's not cryptic, it's not sort of a riddle, it's clear and absolute. A very important part of communication that needs to take place in all relationships, clarity of communication, where we spoke about it before. Then he says there's amira. Amira represents hidden communication. Body language, cryptic messages. Also another very important part of communication in all relationships, right? Sometimes it's not the messages that we convey to other people, it's the way we convey them, the subtle messages. The way we look at people, the body language, the way we smile at people, right? Because not everything can be communicated through words. Things which are more communication of connection, that second thing I spoke about before, that sometimes more comes together with the way we say it and the love with the way we say it and the twinkle in our eye the way we say it. Whatever the facial expressions are, it needs to come together with amira. It's not just the clarity, it's also the subtle messages, the hidden messages that come with that communication. But then he says there's a third form of communication that's called sicha. Sicha is schmoozing, chatting. And I know I've said this before, but I believe that in many, many instances, this is the most lacking thing from relationships today. Just schmoozing, spending time together. Because what happens is it's such a fast-moving world. And people are so busy, and there's so much to talk about, there's so much to arrange, there's so much to plan, right? People who are dedicated spouses are always to each other, always talk to each other. Yes, they have good communication. They share ideas, they share opinions, they share planning, they share values. But when there's a business and there's kids and there's so much happening around there, so often people don't just spend time schmoozing. I'm not talking about watching television together, I'm talking about schmoozing, talking nonsense, not talking about business, not talking about kids, not talking about future plans, not talking about anything, just schmoozing. Right? Parents and children don't schmooze enough. Parents are dedicated parents, they're schlepping their kids here, there, math lessons, tennis lessons, beautiful. But they're not schmoozing, they're not getting on the floor and just having a good time. Not talking about homework, not like normal conversation that goes home when a kid comes back from school. How was your day? Normally there's no response. Right? What homework have you got? Let me see your diary. Right? A lot of communication there, right? But that's not sicha. Sicha is the connection, it's the language of bonding. It's when people just connect. No agendas, no goal. Just connect. And that just connecting brings another dimension to the relationship. It brings enjoyment to the relationship. Which is the last thing that I want to talk about very quickly. It's not just because we've spoken about many times throughout the series that relationships need work. All relationships need work. To sustain and develop a relationship, for a relationship to be nurtured, takes effort. But you know, sometimes people work hard at their relationships, and that's good, but they don't take off time to celebrate their relationships, to see the good in the relationships, to stop and reflect of, let's just not work today, let's just enjoy it. And that concept of joy is so important, and it's achieved by understanding and reflecting on the blessings that we have in all relationships. Every relationship has issues. Every relationship has bumps along the road. Every relationship has things that we need to work on. Every relationship has communication that needs to be upgraded. But every relationship has tremendous blessing with it. We just need to hear it. We need to be cognizant of it. And then we need to enjoy it. I saw a beautiful story from the Baal Shem Tov. Baal Shem Tov this Shabbos is the 18th of Elul, it's his birthday, a commemoration of his birthday. But the Baal Shem Tov was the founder of the Hasidic movement. Now when he started the Hasidic movement, he put a tremendous emphasis on joy. Right? And because of that, it was very common that Hasidim would break into a song and dance. It was just one of the things that Hasidim did throughout the ages. And someone once came to the Baal Shem Tov and said, "What's with your students? Like, are they normal? Like, I mean, like nothing... It doesn't take much to get them singing, to get them dancing, like it's just on the spontaneously they can sort of break into song, break into dance. It's just a kind of normal behavior." So he said to them the following. He said, a very spiritual thing, but I think it's very applicable to our life experiences and relationships in particular. He told the story of a musician that came to town. He said he was a great unknown talent. And this musician comes to town, he stands on a street corner and he starts to play his instrument. Slowly people start to pass and they hear something very special, so they stop and they spell down by this tune that this musician is playing. And soon there's a big crowd and they're standing around this musician, and after a while there's a rhythm and there's a beat, and not long there's everyone's dancing. He says, unfortunately what happens is a deaf person walks by and he sees them dancing and he cannot understand what everyone's dancing about. He cannot understand something about Shanta because he cannot hear the music. He cannot hear the tune. So he said, "My disciples," he says, "are very moved." This is what he said. I'll read you the words. He said, "are very moved by the melody that issues forth from every creature in God's creation. They see the blessing, they see the amazing miracle in every creature of God's creation. And when they listen to that tune, they break into song." Right? Now I'll share with you the story because when we do put in effort to grow as human beings or to strengthen our relationships, so often in life we don't take enough time just to reflect on our progress, just to enjoy the blessings, just to acknowledge and appreciate the wonderful aspects that exist already in where we've come from and gone to and that exist in our relationships. And therefore we don't take enough time to instill that element of joy in our relationships. And a critical part of all relationships is we've got to respect, we've got to love, we've got to learn to communicate properly. Some communications are difficult conversations. It needs a lot of thought, it needs a lot of skill. But we also need just to enjoy. We need to enjoy our kids, we need to enjoy our marriages, we need to enjoy our friends, we need to enjoy our relationships in general. And the way we do that is, number one, through that concept of sicha, the concept of just taking off time and promise yourselves that you will not talk about anything that's important. Just schmoozing. Take a walk for once in a while and just schmooze. With our spouses, with our kids, differently of course. Just to schmooze, just to connect, just to bond, just to enjoy each other's company. And also it comes through reflecting on the good parts of the relationship. We need to actually sit down and appreciate what we have. We need to appreciate all the good components of the relationships which God has given us and which we enjoy. Because instilling joy into relationships is critical for the furtherment, for the development of those relationships. Because joy always, in every part of life, joy and enjoying something brings confidence, brings upbeat, you overlook things that are perhaps more tense. It brings ambition, it just brings a lot of strength, and it strengthens the good parts that we already have. And therefore, it's not by chance that the acronym worked out that way, that in the word relate, the last letter is the E, which is enjoy, because that is such an important part of relationship. I should remind you once again that next Thursday, we are having one just on Rosh Hashanah, a personal growth concert. But once again, just there's some information around the tables. Wednesday morning, we have the Shiur at 10 o'clock at Ariella's house, and all the other things that we spoke about for next week. Have a great week.